Sekiro Shadows Die Twice pushes 2 million copies sold, and more, coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and you're in for a real treat today. Today is our 100th episode special. Hard to believe, I know, right? But I started this show back in July of last year and had to take a couple months off and in between episodes here and there. So obviously episode 100 should have come and gone a long time ago. But yeah, be that as it may, this is the 100th episode, and I'm super excited and glad you guys are all here, and thank you all for the viewership and the support so far. So obviously on the top of the news that we'll be looking at today, it'll be Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. We'll also be looking at LinkedIn adding more reactions to spur more engagement on their content. We'll also be looking at an Xbox executive who decided that he doesn't like Google Stadia and believes it'll lack content. We'll also be looking at the Acer Concept D9 laptop, which once we get into that gadget, you guys will get a kick out of it. We'll also be looking at Sony developing a 16K display. Get this, it's a 783-inch crystal LED screen, about the size of a city bus, if not a little bit larger. We'll also be looking at Sharp's folding smartphone that looks like my Game Boy, in my dreams, at least. And we'll also be looking at apparently Ninja tearing Fortnite a new one, saying that they might be setting themselves up to be the next H1Z1 unless they start listening to their community or something like that. We'll also be covering some tech trivia today in tech history and more. But first, I want to let you guys in on a little secret. It's episode 100, and I know it should have come and gone a long time ago, but I'm super excited you guys are here. We're making a couple big changes to the site. Namely, we're looking at something that we plan on introducing May 1st, so be on the lookout for that. And if you haven't subscribed already, hey, be sure you go and do that so that you can be updated and notified and up to date about whatever latest tech happenings are. We cover, if you're new here, the latest on tech, gadgets, gaming news. We usually pick a couple of the important stuff and stuff that might be more mainstream, but we also try to look for the more interesting stuff that, you know, might not be more apparent, apparently. Oh, and I can't use that word. Great. I'm just reminding my coworker at work. He said, you can't use the word apparently. Use a different word. Okay, obviously. So that's the word we're going to be using from here on out. So I hope you guys are having a great week so far. The week is almost closing out here. So we'll be getting into some trivia right now. All right, time for some trivia and a little bit of sad news that goes along with this. It's kind of bittersweet. It's going to be the last trivia that we'll be having for quite some time until I decide to bring it back or I bring it back in another format. I know this is one of the most requested formats that you guys enjoyed segment-wise of this entire show. So obviously, if you want this segment still included, please, by all means, let me know on Twitter, at TechNewsGadget. Leave a comment on this video. We're reading, we're watching, keeping an eye out, but this will be the last one going on from here on out, so kind of a bittersweet. Keep in mind that last episode, episode 99, I asked you guys, when did the first Xbox come out? Bonus points if you can get the month and day, too. And I checked on Twitter right before booting up the show, and the answer was, well, nothing, because none of you guys were playing the trivia. So I'm kind of thinking we might just leave the trivia stuff for our community servers and Twitter when we do that there. But the answer to that question, I know for those of you who are interested, the first Xbox came out on November 15th, 2001. So if you got that answer close in your head, well, that's roughly right when it happened. So that's all the trivia that we have. Wrapping it up, we're actually introducing a new segment, and I don't have the graphic done for it yet, but I have the noise. That's the noise that you'll be hearing from here on out. Yeah, it's the same one that we use for trivia, but it's just going to be different. Now, I know if you're watching the video right now, you're like, well, you just played the trivia one again. Yeah, I know we're getting a graphic redone. So it's we're now changing this segment over to Did You Know Tech Facts. We'll shorten it to Did You Know. And we'll share a handful, a couple, or maybe one tech fact, depending on how much time we have. Speaking of, did you know that scientists made a nano guitar the size of a human blood cell? Yeah, it's true. Cornell University researchers carved the tiny musical instrument out of crystalline silicon and claim that it's the world's smallest nano guitar at 10 micrometers long. The guitar's six strings are each about 50 nanometers or 100 atoms wide. And while it was, quote, made for fun to illustrate the technology, it also demonstrates how this tech could be used in fiber optics, displays, sensors, and electronics. And also, did you know that the first item sold on eBay was a broken laser pointer? Apparently, that's what you sell on eBay to find out if your idea for a website is going to be profitable or not. Buyer beware, as they say. Thankfully, buyer Mark Fraser was apparently aware of the fact that he was getting a broken laser pointer when he purchased it for $14.83 from eBay's founder, Pierre Omidyar, in 1995. Oh, and in case you didn't know, yeah, it's how long eBay's been around since 1995. Gosh, it's too long. Okay, moving right along to today in tech history, being that today is April 11th, 2019. On this day in 1985, almost exactly 2 years after joining Apple, John Sculley asked Steve Jobs to step down as head of the Macintosh division at an Apple computer board meeting. With the backing of the other executives at the company, Jobs is stripped of nearly all responsibilities at Apple. While he retains the title of chairman, he has no authority and eventually leaves Apple, much to their eventual dismay, and then they have to, please, Steve, come back to the force. We have cookies. Cookies? Yeah, cookies. Cookies good. So, there you go. See, that's what happens when you kick out the visionary behind the company, the leader, and then you bring him back and you go, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. You don't do again. No, you don't do again. Gosh, it's so stupid. Anyways, also, on this day in history, in 1936, German computer designer Zeus files for a patent. German computer pioneer Konrad Zeus files for a patent for the automatic execution of calculations, a process he invents while working on what would become the Z1, Germany's first computer. In the patent application, Zeus offers the first discussion of programmable memory, using the term combination memory to describe breaking programs down into bit combinations for storage. It is the first device to calculate in binary with translation to decimal. Zeus goes on to build a series of computers. So, with that out of the way, let's head on over to today's feature story. Alright, Sekiro. Shadows Die Twice. A game that, well, everybody figured, oh great, it's going to be another Dark Souls or another Bloodborne video game. Oh great, this is going to be a whole lot of fun. Well, apparently it was a lot of fun, enough to knock Fortnite out of its top spot for at least a couple days, or then some at least. And also blew past records, selling 2 million copies in 10 days. That's not to mention the probably 2 million broken controllers and counting that, you know, people have been frustrated and whined about, saying, we need to change the difficulty level. We need to make it accessible to more people. It's like, who cares? Make the game however you want. If people are going to throw a fit and smash a controller, that's their own imperative. They can do whatever they want. So, From Software, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice has sold 2 million copies in just 10 days. Revealed by publisher Activision, this number was achieved between sales on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Activision confirmed to IGN that this is sold through to consumers and includes both digital and physical sales on all platforms. It's been an honor to work with From Software to help introduce a brand new franchise to gamers around the world, said Activision VP of Product Management and Marketing, Michelle Fonseca? There we go, got it. The fans have made Sekiro one of the most incredible game launches of 2019. They're not mentioning Apex Legends for obvious reasons. Thus far, the game has performed well on all platforms, including PC, and we're excited by the continued support from gamers and critics alike. Activision also revealed that Sekiro was the most viewed game on Twitch on launch day, with over 631 million minutes watched during its launch weekend and 1.1 billion minutes watched within 1 week of release. Now, Sekiro follows a string of successful and notably difficult games from From Software, including Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, and Bloodborne. Its release has sparked a renewed debate about accessibility in games, which many argue is far more than just difficulty. And if you're having a tough time with Sekiro, apparently IGN has a walkthrough guide if you guys are interested. In 2016, Dark Souls 3 became Bandai Namco's fastest-selling game ever, officially outselling its predecessor by 61% during its launch week. Apparently, according to IGN, they called the game amazing, saying it's a stylish, focused, stealth action take on the From Software formula that evolves in a different and refreshing direction. And it looks like, based on what I've been hearing so far, people have been whining for an easy mode. Hey, guess what, guys? I'll give you a little hint. Bloodborne didn't have it. Dark Souls didn't have it. Demon's Souls didn't have it. If you happen to throw a fit and smash a controller, it's your own fault. I mean, there's an extent to which some players play the game, and if you're not one of those players, the game's not meant for you. That's all I'm going to say. Plain and simple. So, I know Ninja was playing the game, and I think, honestly, he had the hardest time killing that owl father thing. He died like 4 or 5 times. Here's the thing. Each boss, even though they're this big, fat meat shield, have a very predictable way that they interact with the player. After a while, it becomes a pattern. So you have to figure out as quickly as you can. It's okay. You usually die the first couple of times trying to figure out the pattern. That's a good thing. And then once you figure it out, you go, okay, we need to do this, we need to do that, and figure out how to beat the person at their own game. They built this into the game. It's a puzzle, okay, guys? It's a pattern. If you're not getting it, it's clearly flown right over your head and two flew over the cuckoo's nest. It's okay, the game's not for you, but for the rest of us, we're going to have some fun playing the game for a while longer. Did you guys play Sekiro? Did you enjoy it? I don't know. Let me know down in the comment section or on Twitter, @TechNewsGadget. I would love to hear your thoughts. To be fair, while I would like to get the game, I wouldn't have the time to devote putting the time into it to beating the game to enjoy it to the extent that you guys are. So if you enjoy it, let us know. And if you didn't, let us know. We would love to hear your thoughts on it. Moving on to some tech news. LinkedIn is adding celebrate, love, insightful, and curious reaction to spur more engagement. Apparently, LinkedIn is pointing straight out of Facebook's playbook and saying, hey guys, you can like, celebrate, love, insightful, and curious. Because, well, sometimes a like in social media doesn't give the full picture, or you're just not inspired enough to write a full response. So today, LinkedIn addressed that issue on its own platform, which I'm excited to hear, with the introduction of 4 new reactions people can use in response to posts in their timelines. In addition to like, you can now react in 4 other ways to posts with icons that indicate celebrate, love, insightful, and curious. And I really like the way that they're taking it. They didn't even add the whole sad, wow, or angry emotes, because there's really no place or point for them. I mean, why would you want to react that on a LinkedIn post? It's a very different user base that uses LinkedIn than Facebook. Just in case you didn't know, now you know. So, I find it curious and insightful that there isn't a haha among them, or a lol. Not many laughs or entertainment to be found on LinkedIn, I guess. And that's just according to the author of this article. Why would there be? I mean, you're not on LinkedIn to sit there and get a haha or entertainment value out of it. That's not why you're on LinkedIn. Gosh. Okay, anyways. The reactions are rolling out globally to the company's nearly 600 million users starting today to both desktop and mobile apps. LinkedIn's rollout comes in the wake of similar moves on other social platforms, perhaps most noticeably on Facebook, which launched an expanded set of reaction buttons more than 3 years ago. And if you didn't know that, well, you learned something new today. LinkedIn has never been one for jumping quickly to new trends, but this nevertheless shows that it's listening and understands that it has to provide more to users to help it make its platform more dynamic, to help spur more engagement, and in turn more people posting to the platform, which leads to higher engagement rates, which leads to more time spent on the site, which leads to more money for LinkedIn. But it's a good way to do it, because everybody wins in all of this. LinkedIn product manager Chrissy Chen notes that the company based its selection of reactions on the kind of conversations that people were already having on LinkedIn, and probably the kinds of conversations that LinkedIn would like to continue to encourage, and also what people were writing most commonly when providing 1 to 2 word terse responses. typically posts range from people announcing new professional roles or milestones to sharing things from somewhere else, hence the leaning to two reactions giving encouragement and two more contemplative reactions. LinkedIn's wider goals in providing tools like this are to continue to get more users engaged on its platform. So, there you are. What do you think? Do you use LinkedIn? You probably don't, but I'm familiar with LinkedIn, use it fairly often, on it fairly often. I don't really talk much. I usually use a lot of the reading and everything, all the other features that are available on it, but I'm usually given to liking more of a comment than I am anything else, to even typing out a comment on LinkedIn to reply to somebody's post. So I like the whole expanded set of reactions that you can now use, because now I can actually clarify what I liked about it more specifically, as it were. And if you aren't on LinkedIn, you really should, because that's probably the way to park your resume and to get professional and jobs and career building stuff, because, hey, it's 2019. We don't use paper resumes anymore, guys. It's definitely fluid. It's not fixed piece of paper that you print out. Nope. And I'm not even talking about the one that you got from the office where Okay, I gotta say this. I'm reminded of the Office episode where Dwight is sitting in the manager's chair and he brings in Mo, or somebody, I think, he brings in Mo to interview for a job. And Mo hands him the resume and he looks at it and he's like, "Since when were you the manager of McDonald's?" I'm paraphrasing here. And he's like, "Well, you told me to write all this stuff." "No, I didn't tell you to tell me about this kind of stuff. Oh, gosh, I'm the manager." "Okay, you know what? Get out." And Mo runs out. It's so funny. So there you go. You got some office humor for me. Enjoy, guys. Moving right along to some tech/gadget news. Well, apparently Microsoft Xbox executives believe that Google Stadia won't match local gameplay and will lack content. Oh, boy, here we go. More posturing going on here from the executives. But obviously, there's still a tremendous amount we don't know about Google's game streaming service Stadia, but some have already formed their own opinions. In a recent interview, one executive for Microsoft's Xbox expressed some thoughts on Google Stadia rubbishing on the upcoming service. Speaking to The Telegraph, Mike Nichols had a few choice words regarding Google's efforts to get into gaming. In an interview, Nichols makes it clear that he doesn't think Google Stadia can match what Xbox has to offer. See, this is exactly the kind of way that they figured they would. They'd be like, "Well, yeah, because we've been trying to figure out how the heck to plug Xbox into the desktop and the mobile applications and the console itself. So we have this whole, like, unified experience and with the laptops and our tablets that we have, too." And Google is literally just, jeez. Oh, I mean, we already had to give them control over for Google Chrome. So that we can build Microsoft Edge, because we can't figure out how to build an Internet Browser Explorer anymore. Now I'm bad-mouthing the company. Basically, it's not going to be as good as ours, because our xCloud Gaming or whatever is coming out, because ours is cooler and it's better and local and all that stuff, and Google's like, so... one point for Nichols is that he believes the cloud-based Google Stadia can't match the experience you get on a local machine such as the Xbox. He's concerned with the expected 20 gigabyte per hour internet use of the service, as well as the input lag it might have. However, the main concern he has is content. Nichols believes that Google simply doesn't have the relationships to properly deliver a strong content library. Now, while Google has confirmed some big names, the list of games that will be supported is largely unknown. Even though Google has said it's seen great support from the gaming community and is working on its own original content for Stadia, it remains to be seen how that will compete with platforms such as Xbox. And then I guess there's a quote, "Emerging competitors like Google have a cloud infrastructure, a community with YouTube, but they don't have the content. You won't necessarily need a device over time, but you'll get the best experience with a local processing power." That's essentially saying, play it on Xbox because it's cooler, guys, and everything. And yeah, guys, you forget something. Epic Games essentially made their own software type thing and are selling exclusive content and games, and are actually pulling it off of Steam too, and Steam's all mad and concerned and upset about that too. So just be careful. You might not know much about Stadia until, obviously, we know much more about Stadia. So it is what it is until we know more. So there you go. Moving on to some gadget news, the Acer Concept D9 laptop was announced, and Engadget was there for the hands-on event. Apparently, they called it a bombastic attempt to stand out, powerful and eye-catching, but not elegant. And in case you're listening to the audio version of the show, the podcast, you guys are totally missing out. We actually have video that goes along with this over on YouTube and Facebook. You can go to Tech News Gadget on both, search for them, enjoy the video. By the way, it's also included in the show notes for this episode. By the way, all the articles as well for everything we discussed today can be found at technewsgadget.net/100. You'll be able to find the show notes for whatever reason you need, and tap on the article, click on the article, and enjoy, watch the video, share it with friends, do what you want. But here it is. We're looking at the Acer Concept D9. Acer has been busy. It unveiled a whole new brand of computers at its global press conference today, showing off not just a trio of laptops and a pair of desktops, but three monitors and a new VR headset as well. Now, that's in addition to the slew of gaming laptops and display it also launched here. The new series, called Concept D, is a result of a collaboration with IF Design and focuses on four principles: accurate color reproduction, powerful performance, silent fans, and attractive design. Now, do all those hold up to what we're going to be looking at? Well, let's see. Here's a couple photos. We got photos that goes along with this. So, link into the show notes to see all of the photos and videos that go along with it. Or you could just watch a YouTube video of this, and you'll get we have the video of it with pictures and stuff too. So here you go. Here's one look at it from one angle. Another angle. I really like this interesting feature that they're bringing back. This whole like little forward board to bring the screen of the laptop closer to the keyboard, so it's not that so far away. That's how it looks. Looks pretty nice, pretty nice. Bulky, though. But the company showed off three new Concept D notebooks, which it's also calling creator laptops, the Concept D9, D7, and D5. Now, the names are confusing. Since they don't actually reference the size of the machines, they don't really mean anything at all. Of the trio, the 17.3-inch 9 is the most eye-catching. It has an Ezel Aero hinge, so you can pull the screen closer to you, which is what we just saw, over the keyboard. Acer's used this mechanism before, but it's still an unusual feature and nice to see, kind of changing the game a little bit. For a device that's the result of a partnership and with a design agency, the Concept D9 doesn't actually look pretty. It's clunky, and I could fit 2.5 fingers in the display's thick bezels. The hinge that holds up the screen is also unwieldy, and overall, the Concept D9 really isn't attractive. It just looks odd. The good news is the other two notebooks in the Concept D family are significantly prettier. The D5, in particular, is the thinnest and lightest of the trio, and its sharp profile and white finish lend it a modern aesthetic. And the D7 doesn't look shabby either, with the same matte white finish and cut-off corners giving it a unique hexagonal shape. Both of these laptops have 15.4-inch UHD matte screens, and they were vibrant, so they look like they had the Windows wallpaper directly painted onto their panels. Kind of impressive. Here's a couple other photos of the other version that looks significantly better, the D5 and D7. Looks more like a regular laptop, except the... Man. Nice. Got a couple of ports that they're showing off, a couple of sides of the keyboard. Here's the back of it. The front side angle of it. Now, all three Concept D laptops are Pantone validated, support 100% of the Adobe RGB color gamut, and have Dental E color accuracy ratings of less than 2. In the Concept D9's case, the Delta E number is actually less than 1. Numbers closer to 0 are better. Now, what this means is that these displays are capable of reproducing a large variety of colors and do so accurately, which is ideal for graphic designers and photo editors who need their work to look realistically, hence why the whole creator tagline was thrown in. These are for creators. I did find the Concept D9 screen vibrant and colorful, but even at maximum brightness, the 400 nit panel was hard to see under the harsh lights at the demo area. So if we looked at a couple of the specs here, apparently the Concept D9's 9th generation uses a 9th gen Intel Core i7 CPU, but for the light browsing and drawing they did, the machine ran smoothly. You can configure it with up to a 9th gen Intel Core i9 CPU and an NVIDIA GeForce RTX 2080 card, which can boost that powerful performance if you're looking for that. The Concept D7 is based on NVIDIA's Max-Q design and go up to a GeForce RTX 2060 card, while the Concept D5 only offers AMD Radeon RX Vega MGL for graphics. The latter also only goes up to an Intel 8th gen Core i7 CPU, so don't expect as much muscle in that thin and light rig. But apparently the keyboard and the trackpad were kind of complex. The keys had decent travel, but they also had a strange squishy response that made them feel sticky. The trackpad, meanwhile, didn't recognize any of my two-finger gestures when I tried to pinch and zoom on a sketch. I was also slightly disoriented by the fact that the trackpad was to the right of the keyboard where a numpad would normally lie. My fingers frequently wandered below the spacebar where I'd normally expect that trackpad to be. This placement issue is something I expect is easy enough to get used to over time, but the keys and lack of a multi-finger gesture support is a little bit disturbing. Nearby Acer rep told me that the units we were testing were early samples, so hopefully this is something that gets fixed before the laptops go on sale. Now, you guys are interested in price? Well, the Concept D5 and D7 will be available later this month, starting at $1,700 and $2,300 respectively, while the Concept D9 will cost roughly starting at $5,000 when it goes on sale in June. As expected, these aren't cheap, but it's encouraging to see a company try to make super powerful laptops that look attractive. Concept D is a promising effort, but until we can test these laptops, and can't really tell if Acer's play for cash-rich creators will be successful. For now, well, there's a couple really confusing names and a couple confusing things about it until it actually sorts itself out and we can figure out what the heck is going on about it. So, Sherilyn Lowe is the author who looked at this, so we'll have to wait to hear back if you guys are interested in hearing more about the Acer Concept D. Moving right along, Sony developed and introduced a 16K display, and if you're looking at the screen right now, we're looking at a 783-inch crystal LED screen. Look at how big that screen is. So, Sony said at the National Association of Broadcasters, NAB, trade show that's going on currently, that it had developed a screen featuring a 16K resolution that uses its crystal LED technology. The display is currently being installed at a new research center in Japan at a cosmetics group. The screen is 63 feet long and 17 feet high. It features a diagonal of 783 inches and is generally larger than a bus. Sony does not disclose exact resolution of the display, other than saying it has around 16,000 horizontal pixels, though judging by the looks of the screen, we're dealing with something that is non-standard resolution and non-standard aspect ratio. So, it also is using the company's crystal LED technology that uses multiple micro LED based modules to build custom displays featuring virtually any size, any resolution, and any aspect ratio. Featuring individually controlled micro LEDs, the modules have no bezels and can be attached to each other seamlessly. Sony and Samsung use micro LED or direct lit LED based modules to build custom screens for cinemas, airports, showrooms, and other venues that need large displays. So, quite impressive. And as 8K content is slow to emerge, it will take the industry some time to adopt a 16K resolution. Apparently, we just skipped right over 8. Therefore, such ultra-large, ultra-high-def screens will be limited for the corporate and digital signage world for years to come, until we get to the consumer side of things, and then you could just say, hey guys, stop by my pad and look at my 783-inch crystal LED 16K display. Make sure to put on your goggles, because those colors really pop, dude. Good. Moving right along to another gadget news, Sharp is coming out with a vertical folding smartphone that essentially looks like your dream Game Boy, for at least those of you who remember what a Game Boy looks like. In the brave new world of folding touchscreen devices, companies are throwing every random design at the wall, hoping one of them will be the device that sticks. Well, at least for consumers. Sharp, who started producing flexible OLED screens back in June of 2018, recently showed off a prototype of a smartphone that folds vertically, like the clamshell cell phones of yesterday or the modern Game Boy I hope Nintendo actually goes back to making. According to Engadget JP, who got a hands-off demo of the device, Sharp's prototype features a 16.18-inch OLED display with an elongated, 1440 by 3040 pixel resolution. It's reminiscent of Sony's new Xperia 10 and Xperia 10 Plus devices with their long 21 by 9 displays, but while we found those too lanky to comfortably use, Sharps would be much easier to pocket given it folds down to half its size. As with the Samsung Galaxy Fold, the inward bending approach would put more stress on the folding screen given the smaller radius it has to compress to, apparent crease in the middle of the display, but Sharp's representative told Engadget JP that the company's screen tech can survive over 300,000 bends before the wear and tear starts to physically damage the OLED. Even if you're checking your phone 100 times a day, that's over 8 years of use, which is much longer than smartphone users hold on to device. Now, they didn't have any representatives who would comment on if or when Sharp plans to introduce it, but it did confirm that the screen could be implemented with an outward folding design as well. It's been rumored that Motorola plans to revive its popular Razr as a bendy phone as well, which would feature the same design approach as Sharp just demonstrated here. But more importantly, will Nintendo beat them both to the market with a bendy screen Game Boy? Well, the company's history avoiding the latest and greatest hardware makes me feel like it's a long shot, but that's not going to stop me from dreaming about it. And moving on to our final article, we're looking at a gaming article. I guess Ninja is fearing that Fortnite is setting itself up to be the next H1Z1. Ever since Fortnite's release, it has held a practical stranglehold on the Battle Royale market, and while other challengers have appeared, nothing has found a way to knock it off its throne, at least, well, consistently. It might end up being that another game doesn't even have to do it, as Epic Game appears to be doing that themselves with the recent updates. Update 8.2 will no doubt go down as one of the most controversial updates Fortnite has ever released. Many, with Ninja taking the lead of the pack and few others, were so frustrated with the update that the direction it was taking that they chose to play other games instead, including Uno, which was actually quite hilarious, and Sekiro, which was even funnier. But I really missed the part where Ninja turned into old Ninja and threw a fit and started smashing his controller. He never actually got to that point, which would have been great if he did. Now Ninja fears that if Epic Games continues to not listen to the community, Fortnite will go down the same path that doomed H1Z1 and cause the game to die. I'm telling you, man, they gotta be careful, Ninja said. They're taking on too much at this point, and there are still so many glitches in the game that have needed to be fixed. Gotta be careful, dude. They're going down the same path of H1Z1. Now, remember, H1Z1 used to be at the top of the food chain, but a plethora of bad updates and decisions by the developers doomed the game and caused all of the major streamers to jump ship. Now, Fortnite still has a long way to go before the game actually dies, but a lot of players do agree the game is heading down the wrong path. But even after the release of the first update following 8.2, Fortnite pros are still blasting Epic Games for the decisions currently being made. The game will still retain a large player base because of the Fortnite World Cup, but it's hard to imagine people still supporting Epic Games beyond that point if the updates don't improve, although it remains to be seen what actually manages to sift out. Epic Games does listen to the community, as evidenced by the swift removal of the Infinity Blade shortly after it was added, but it remains to be seen if they're actually reading the reactions of players within this past couple of updates. What do you guys think? What are your feedback thoughts about this? I don't know. Let us know in the comment section, or you could just comment down below. Ninja was right. Fortnite's going to kill itself. I don't know. Just to see if you're listening. But yeah, it seems Fortnite has its own issues that it should be really looking into. Not adding new stuff to the game. That's not what we're saying here. Fixing glitches and bugs, which helps to streamline the whole entire process. Just fix that and we'll be good going forward. So, with that, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We appreciate your support, listening, watching, commenting. New episodes come out every weekday. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and Facebook Watch. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know and double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.